Bow hunters are some of the hardest working hunters there are. Most of us work hard all year long just to get a couple weekends or burn our vacation time to sit in a tree. And just like the American blue collar worker, we're trying to balance work, family, faith, and a little time for ourselves in the great outdoors. Now let me introduce you to Trollco Clothing, a brand built by blue collar workers for blue collar workers. Workwear, comfortable tees, hoodies and hats for both men and women, Trollco represents the hardworking American. So whether you're operating heavy equipment, wrenching on engines, or in a factory living that shift life, Trollco has your back, literally. Head to trollco.com/hunting. That's trollco.com/hunting and enter the discount code Empire25 for 25% off of your first order. Trollco, for the hardworking American. This time of year, you're going to find me jigging for crappies off my father-in-law's boat, celebrating a successful turkey hunt, or just sitting on the back deck watching time go by with a quality cigar from Thompson Cigar. Thompson Cigar has been around since 1915, offering the widest array of cigars and cigar accessories at very affordable prices. Thompson Cigar offers your favorite brands like Swisher Sweets, Cohiba, Backwoods, and Monte Cristo shipped fresh directly to your door. Also, be sure to check out their 5-pack fever deals and join their value club for big savings. Visit thompsoncigar.com and enter the discount code SE at checkout for 20% off of all orders over $75. Thompson Cigar, quality cigars at affordable prices.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable. This episode of the Sportsman's Empire is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. Since 1952, Interstate Batteries has been evoking compassion and a trustworthy spirit into the surrounding communities. Interstate Batteries is a mission-driven company fueled by purpose and guided by their values. If you need help locating a specific battery, stop into your local Interstate Batteries retail store and speak with a battery specialist. They even offer cell phone repairs. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.
Sierra has all the best active and outdoor brands you need, from athletic stuff, like a full-court pickup game, swish, to athletic-ish stuff, like a half-mile stroll. Get those steps in! And for morning hikes up the mountain trail, good pace, to nighttime ghost stories from the camping chair. What a twist! Whatever level of active, Sierra loves it all. Head to Sierra or Sierra.com for the brands you want at the prices that let you do it all. From athletic to athletic-ish, Sierra's got it.
Two Good & Co. coffee creamers are made with farm fresh cream, real milk, and contain 3 grams of sugar per serving. That's 40% less than the 5 grams per serving in leading traditional coffee creamers for a rich, delicious experience. Whether you enjoy your coffee hot, cold, bold, or frothy, Two Good coffee creamers make every sip a good one. Two Good coffee creamers, real goodness in every sip. Find them at your local Kroger in the creamer aisle.
You saw the game-winning play once, but have to replay it 3 times on the way back to the hotel. Because some moments don't end at the buzzer. Life's a trip. Make the most of it at Best Western. Book direct and save at bestwestern.com.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show. And joining me on the show today are my mom, Rhonda, and my stepdad, Kevin. Now, this show is going to be a ton of fun because recently, my mom, went viral on my account. We did a little video about her cooking and meal prepping while she's out in the woods hunting, and people really loved it, and we got a great response. People want more content about that, so I'm excited to chat about that. But ultimately, I want to see how their season's going, what they have coming up as far as season goes, and yeah, it's always fun getting up to Wisconsin and hunting. Unfortunately, with the limited time we had this year, we didn't get to do this in person, so we're doing it over the internet. Nonetheless, it's a great episode, so let's jump on with my mom and stepdad.
Like, he was doing things that were just badass.
That was one of the coolest moments of my life. I was really scared, but knowing that Dan had the gun, I did have the rifle, like, we would be okay.
All right, guys, welcome to today's show, and joining me on the show today, I feel like it's just weird to introduce you guys by your names. So, my mom and stepdad, but also, we were just talking yesterday on the phone, I'm like, you need to start an account called, like, the Nomadic Outdoors Mom, or something like that, because everybody loves your content. But Rhonda and Kevin Myron are on with me, and of course, you guys have a ton of shoulder mounts behind you, duck mounts behind you, and you're making good food. I'm sitting here drinking a Coke, waiting for Culver's to deliver on Christmas Eve, and you have stuff on the smoker. So,
yeah,
ribs on the smoker. Man, why don't we come up there for Christmas?
Come on up. There's still time.
Yeah, we'll just drive. We should be there at like 5 a.m. tomorrow morning.
Perfect.
So we're going to chat about a ton of different stuff. We're going to talk about whitetail season this year, how that went, because you guys, it seems like on your farm, you guys always kill a handful of good deer. You see just insane amounts of deer. And I would say more deer than really anybody I know when they go out hunting. But this year when I went down to Texas, I think we saw like 500 or 600 deer in 3 days of hunting. So I can't really say that there's more deer in Wisconsin that I see, because
no, I would say you won.
Yeah.
Well, but I will say if you could see as much ground up there, you would see more deer.
Oh, yeah.
But it's like you're so limited because of the hills and the trees, whereas here, I mean, I can look at 1,000 acres from one hillside.
Yeah.
And so it doesn't, I mean, I think deer numbers, you still have it beat for sure. It's just a matter of visibility.
Right. Yeah.
So let's start with how season went this year. You guys got out a little bit. Mom, you got out a little bit with your crossbow, right?
Yeah, I didn't make it out near as much as I wanted to. I did get out for a day and a half with my crossbow. I did take it out with me when I went out hunting, when I went out rifle hunting, just in case. And so, yeah, I was able to get out a little bit with it and saw some deer while I was out there. But obviously, it's a whole different animal when you're talking about a crossbow or bow hunting versus rifle. So,
but let's clarify. That was after she already shot her buck. You know, she shot her buck opening morning, of course, and then she took her crossbow out. So,
yeah.
The amount of messages that I get from you on opening morning, just try, especially when I have a slow opening morning, and then right away you're like, all right, got one, gonna go warm up, gonna go make breakfast, or I'm gonna sit in my blind and make breakfast, or does anybody else want me to shoot their buck for them? I'm like, come on, really? You're about to get karate chopped.
Or does anybody got a deer they want me to gut for them, or anything like that?
Yeah. I mean, that one gets a much better response typically than, hey, I'm leading the big buck board already.
Yeah. Let's clarify. I don't shoot anybody's buck for them. So they have to do their own shooting on that, but I will gut it out for them.
It's fun getting a buck down early, but then it's also like, well, shoot. I mean, my buck hunting's over now, you know, now, If you have an open bow tag, then you can still use that. But for me, I'm like, man, when I go up there, an opening day buck, it's fun. It takes the pressure off. But I just would rather, like, keep hunting, you know?
Right. And I thought about that this year. I shot mine at 8 o'clock on opening morning. And right away, my very first thought was, okay, now what am I going to do? Now I'm going to bring my crossbow out and I'm going to try and use that. Mm-hmm. But the other thing I thought of, you know, there's a lot of people out there that haven't gotten that lucky to be able to even get a chance at shooting their buck at 8 o'clock in the morning. And the buck I shot was not one that I necessarily had on camera that I said, oh, I'm going to go after that one. But it was a nice buck. And so I'm like, you know, I'm not going to eat the horns. I have a nice deer in front of me. Why would I pass this up? Mm-hmm. And I did have a much larger buck come out probably 10, 15 minutes before him that I really hesitated on. But he was right on the line fence and I couldn't tell exactly where in coordinates with that line fence he was. And I'm not that person that's going to do that. And so I just let him go. And everybody said, you know, he probably was on our side at that point, but it was just too close for me to call. And I just didn't do that shot. So, yeah,
which is a good decision.
But I got
sure.
Yeah.
Play it safe.
But I got a nice buck. They weighed him out when I took him to have him processed. And they said he weighed, what, 180?
185.
Yeah. So that's a nice buck. So.
185 field dress is no joke, especially compared to those deer down in Texas. And nothing against Texas. I mean, it's just that they have smaller bodied deer. And it was so wild to see deer that were like, I mean, some of those deer looked mature and were just over 100 pounds maybe.
Mm-hmm.
And well, I mean, I'm talking that's like with everything still in. That's not field dress or anything. I mean, like, I could pick up the deer by myself and fairly easily throw it in the bed of the side-by-side. Okay. Now, I will say, Austin shot one that was pretty big. I bet you his was pushing, like, 150. Mm-hmm. And so, it's like, yeah, that's not as bad. But that was a mature, like, an old buck. And its body size is about as big as a Wisconsin two-year-old. So, I mean, there's definitely a huge difference, but...
Well, they have to have less to eat down there, you know. I mean, you look up here in the farm fields with the corn and the oats and soybean and all that. I mean, that alone's got to play a huge difference on, you know, the size of the deer overall.
Yeah, and to have all those reserves even for, one, the rut, but then after the rut, it's like you go straight into winter. Up there. I mean, my trail cameras have been showing snow for like a week and a half or more now up there. And the deer have to be prepared for that. The one thing I will say, I don't know, I'm assuming it has to do with like food availability, but the deer down there were on their feet all day, all day, every day. And so I'm thinking, you know, they might just have to move a lot more to get the food intake. Whereas in Wisconsin, you know, they can gorge themselves for 30, 45 minutes and then just go pass out all day, get up and do it again later on.
Right.
Whereas and here it was just, like we were.
And they're just feet from their feeding source. You know, it's not like they have to run a mile and find someplace to eat. They bed down fairly close to where they eat.
Especially
if the corn's still up. If the corn's still up, they'll just lay there all day long, stand up, eat a bit, and then lay back down.
Yeah, and their water source is right there as well. So, I mean, especially by us, there's like, what, five or six ponds right in within a quarter mile of each other. I mean, so they got so much source around them for everything. So,
yeah. Yeah, it was definitely a different world down there. I mean, I was very thankful to get the invite to go down there because my season has not been great. I mean, I will say I pulled the trigger one time and had a doe down. And so I was thankful for that. That's still up at the processor. And I don't know if I told you guys that. So on the way up to you guys for Thanksgiving, I dropped it off. And I'm doing that whole deer just in bacon.
Oh, really? So, oh, yeah, you did. You did tell me that.
Yeah.
Why not?
I've got a whole freezer full of burger. I say the whole deer. I'm still getting like the steaks, roast, chops, but then all the rest is just going to bacon. I'm pretty pumped about that.
That's the number one gift I give away at the Myron Christmas Exchange is venison bacon and venison bologna and sausage, because every year the same people keep looking for what gift I bring because they know what's in there. And this year we sort of mix it up a little bit. I put it in a bag instead of wrapping it in an insulated cooler. And it threw people off, but they eventually found it. So, yeah. But no, it's a hot commodity.
That's a good gift. I mean, some venison bacon.
It doesn't matter who it is. They want that gift.
Yeah. And not to mention, it's easy to cook out in your blind if you decide to.
Well, that's always something I look forward to is when I come up there and like restock on bacon, because you guys always have some in the freezer. And I'm like, I'll take some of that. But yeah, now this year I'm finally getting a good chunk of my own. And Sam was so pumped. She's like, can we do the whole thing in bacon? I'm like, That's the hottest thing you've ever said to me.
In a while, yeah, right?
Yeah. Well, yeah. Mom, you started out, so early this season, I was out in a tree bow hunting with my buddy Weston, and you started texting me, and I don't remember if this is the first day you got out with your crossbow or what, but you sent me like 500 messages while I'm in the tree about how long it took you to get to your deer stand because of how many deer were like in between you and your stand. Yep.
It was
and
insane.
I'm sitting there. We saw Weston and I sat there all morning. We saw one buck, and I mean, it was my shooter buck, and we almost had an opportunity at him. But it was so funny because I'm sitting there reading the messages, and he's just shaking his head. And he's like, "Why don't we go up there and hunt? Like, why did we come to Missouri to hunt with you? We should be in Wisconsin hunting right now." So, what was that like? Because you had, I don't even know. Do you keep a counter? Like, do you keep a little clicker, a tally, or anything of how many deer you see?
It's in my head. So, yeah. I just am like, oh, okay, at this time I saw this many. Okay, yep, I took these many more steps and there were this many. So.
And granted, her blind's not even a quarter mile from where she parks her vehicle.
No, my blind is not very far into the woods compared to what people would think it would be. But, yeah, it was insane when I walked out there this year because I literally, just from the farmhouse to, or from his parents' house to the farmhouse is what?
Eighth of a mile,
maybe. And right away that morning, I saw, I had a doe scared me. I walked out the door of the house and there was a doe standing 20 feet from me and I scared her. She scared me. She jumped and went over the driveway and just stood there and stared at me. And I just sat and talked to her and said how stupid she was because she's going to get shot if she keeps doing that. But anyway,
then your mom went in and changed her.
Yeah. No. So then I just drove down to the farmhouse and there were seven of them standing right in the farmyard, just standing there. And I was like, okay, well that's kind of weird. And so then I just watched them and I didn't want to scare them, but they were, you know, ran up into the woods and this way and whatever. And then I got back, I started walking to my stand and it was the strangest thing because all of a sudden I'm like, oh, there's two more deer. Oh wait, there's four more deer walking right past my blind, walking straight towards me down the path. And I just stood there and just stood there. And they literally walked 20 feet from me. And then they stopped and they kind of sniffed around, looked around, started doing a little stomping and snorting. And one took off and then the others, you know, they're like, okay, something must be up. And so then they kind of file, except for one of them just kept standing there and didn't really know what to do. And Then I just watched them because I didn't want to scare them and they just kind of took off a little bit. I walk another 30 yards into the woods and there's two more up on the ridge and I'm like, oh, those are right behind my stand now. So I'm like, okay, I don't want to scare those. I don't exactly know what it is yet, but they're right behind my stand. They're coming down from my old bow hunting stand. And so I was like, so I just was creeping through the woods real slow and they were walking along the ridge and I was walking along the trail and get down towards my blind and I look up the other way and there's two more. And I'm like, okay, this is really strange that I'm seeing all these deer as I'm walking into the woods today.
They're all waiting for breakfast.
Yeah, they were waiting for my breakfast, I guess. But
yeah,
so it was very cool. It took me, it seemed like forever to get out to my stand. And I literally, after I got into my stand, got everything set up and I don't even know how long. And then all of a sudden I had a buck that came right down to me. He was not even 20 yards from me, just a little guy. And so I just love sitting and watching him. And so that's what I did. I watched him. He got about 10 yards from me, walked to my left, walked right up the trail, wasn't afraid, just kept on going. And I just watched him go. So yeah, it was just fun. I love just sitting out there and watching them move around and, you know, watching their habits and stuff like that. So that was very cool.
Oh, yeah. I mean, it seems like they're pretty used to your blind. How long before season do you go out and set your blind up?
So my blind depends on the year and it depends on the weather up here. But this year, what we put it out there, two and a half, 2 weeks about before.
Oh, 2 weeks, yeah.
There's been times it's been literally a couple days before, because it depends on the weather and
ice storms. Like
if we have to, if I see bad weather coming in or a bunch of snow, I don't want to put it out there because I don't want it collapsing. You know, I mean, there's always that chance, and you know, we got to be able to strap it down and things like that. But I haven't had that issue with this blind that I have now. But you know, if you get a good ice storm here in Wisconsin, that could certainly happen. So,
yeah. Yeah, I mean, it seems like the deer are pretty well, like, conditioned to human activity out there. I mean, there's people down at the farm quite a bit, and you guys are going out and checking trail cameras and stuff. But like,
and they do a lot of wood cutting down there, and so I think that does help, too, as far as the noise and the activity out there. They get used to that, and it's not as big of a deal sometimes that there is noise in the woods or, you know, activity in the woods. So,
And that's a lot of it, because, you know, once you get past the barn area where the farm is, you're into the woods area. And, but the thing is, the sound from the farmhouse carries up all them valleys. And like where my stand is, where her stand is, I'm up the main valley. She's up to the finger of the main valley. But you can hear the door close, the screen door slam on the farmhouse. You can hear people talk. You can hear people drive in. You can hear four-wheelers, UTVs, you know, whether it's my dad or my nephew or whoever, you know, come in and out of the woods. But I do think the deer are used to hearing them sounds, but they're still a little skittish when they see people move and stuff like that, obviously. So I do think they're used to people being around as far as noise value, but I don't think they're, you know, like some deer you see, for instance, you know, the elk and stuff you see in Estes Park, you know, it's not that kind of comfort zone by any means, but you know,
I mean, literally they don't, you know, like I said, they walked up to me 20 feet from me, but that's because they didn't catch wind of me whatsoever. And you know, if they would have caught wind of me, they wouldn't have been even close to me. So it's not like they're tame or they're anything like that. They're used to having the noise around. And so they're not as skittish as maybe some places would be. But by no means we do not have fenced in anything on the farm, you know, everything is open. Yeah. And so I know I've read some comments about people saying, oh, they're on a game farm. They're on a fenced farm. They're on a this. It's totally open. You, totally.
What I've discovered is if people don't kill deer as big as the deer you kill, it's automatically that you hunt on a high fence area. Yeah. I mean, it was the same thing. I was getting messages when I was down in Texas. I like posted just a quick, there were no deer in the video. It was at night after I think our first night. And it was just like, hey guys, stay tuned. Like, we're having success down here in Texas. And people were like, well, that's what happens when you hunt high fences. That's what happens when you hunt this and that. And I'm like, oh, great assumption, but no, we are not. Like, there's hardly any fences out there.
Yeah. Right. And that's just that our line fences for our line fence
is a barbed wire fence.
and it's like three high barbed wire fence, but half of them are all down from trees falling down or whatever. And you just never had to put them up because the cattle are gone now. So it's like, there's no sense in fixing them. So there's definitely no fence at all.
No.
I'm going to have to go check our supper.
Okay.
So
let
you know how they are.
You got to taste test those ribs for all of us.
Oh, I will. I got thinking, why don't we do venison ribs? We should try that sometime.
They're just not fat. Fatty enough.
Yeah.
And I've found that even with steaks, a lot of people are like, I mean, don't get me wrong, I love venison. I eat venison all the time. But the venison steaks are not my favorite. They really aren't. There's not enough fat. Right. And
so that's why you use a lot of butter, Dan.
I know. Well, no, I definitely do. I use a lot of butter on most of the venison stuff, but it's like burger. It's the same thing with that. Like, if you were to try to just go all lean, like venison burger,
pretty dry.
Yeah.
It's going to be real dry.
Yeah.
And so
we cut them up. We cut up the tenderloins and stuff. We fry them with some onions and butter on the flat top. And then we use some nice fresh rolls and have little sandwiches with them and stuff. And then some turtle eggs along with those. And you got it made. So
All right, guys, I've got some exciting news, and that is that the Nomadic Outdoorsman knife is back online at paddlegear.com. You heard that right. The first time we launched this knife, they sold out in a couple days, so you better get them while they last. I don't know how many more of these launches we're going to do, but I do know one thing, that they are available right now. So go check yours out. Also, for every three knives that you put in your cart, the fourth knife is free, which is a huge deal. Buy three, get one free. Buy them for groomsmen gifts or party favors or whatever else you want. Get them for your hunt camp this year. Hunting season is upon us. Rifle season is right around the corner. Pick some up for you and your buddies. Either way, go to tattlegear.com and get your Nomadic Outdoorsman knife today. All right, guys, I've got to tell you about some of the new XOP products that I've been using this fall, and some of them I use in kind of an unconventional way. First off, I use the Mondo saddle, but I also use their turkey hunter vest, and I take the Cold World stand, put it in the back of the vest, and carry it in that way. Depending on how far I have to pack in, I'll just bring a foot platform, but one thing I've learned is that if I put the seat cushion on the underside of the seat and flip it up, it turns it into a knee pad also, or I can flip the seat down and sit on it like a conventional tree stand. I also used their holster kit clipped right onto my saddle to carry in my climbing sticks while keeping my hands free. If you're interested in getting a mobile hunting setup like mine, go to xopoutdoors.com and use code NOMADIC for 10% off at checkout. Oh, yeah.
Yeah.
Well, yeah, you go check that. We're gonna listen to some stories from mom about success out in the woods.
The Nomadic mom cook session.
Yeah,
it drives me nuts watching her prep all the time because she's got all these little goofy containers of stuff. And I open the fridge, I'm like, what is all this stuff? Just don't worry about it.
All right. That's just my spaghetti for while I'm hunting.
Well, yeah.
Yeah, I mean, I think yesterday when we were talking, that video, because, I mean, I knew that you cooked out there. I didn't realize you were meal prepping and and like preparing ingredients beforehand. I just figured you'd grab a couple things on your way out the door.
And some that bread was about and lunch meat.
Yeah, I mean, that was me all growing up. It was, I think, every single year I took out summer sausage sandwiches. Mm-hmm. That was it. Two slices of white bread, maybe some mayo, and then summer sausage. And that was it. But the video that, okay, on Instagram, it currently has 3.4 million views, 1,200 comments, 188,000 likes. And that's just of us in your kitchen talking about a little vial that I found that had a single egg and a little bit of milk. And that was it. But everybody's like, this lady's my hero. She cooks out there, and then obviously posting pictures of like the meals that you're actually cooking out there. But that's the other thing. It drives me crazy when you're messaging in the group message, I just shot a buck and we're 30 minutes into opening day. The other thing that drives me crazy is I'm sitting here eating a frozen Snickers from my backpack, and you're sending videos of biscuits and gravy in your deer blind. And I'm like, are you kidding me? Like, I'm about to drive the four-wheeler over there and pick some up.
Well, I think it's funny because when I started shooting in hunting in a blind, and I only did it out of necessity so that I could hunt that year, is because I had surgery on my knee. I had a knee replacement, and I absolutely was extremely upset that I had to sit out in a blind and not in my tree stand that year. I mean, I was to the point of just being mad, downright mad about having to do that, because I loved being in my tree stand. And I swore I would never want to be sitting in a blind. And it's all it is a pop-up blind. That's what it is. It has the zip down windows. It's nothing that stays permanent. We put it out a couple of weeks if we can before hunting, and then take it down usually the very last day of hunting. As long as it's not frozen to the ground, we pull it up, bring it back home, dry it out, and put it away for the year. So it's not anything that's permanent. It's nothing major. It's just, that's what it is. Just a pop-up blind. And so the first year that I had to sit in that blind, I was using a cane to get around in the woods because I had my knee surgery, and sat out there grumbling and griping to myself about being in this stupid blind and I'm never going to see anything. And so I'm sitting there, and that year I did not do any of the meals in the blind. I just took sandwiches and summer sausage, like you said, you know, a little cheese and crackers, something like that, and had that in the blind. And literally I had a deer walk up and stick its head right into the window on my blind. A doe had walked by, and I was like, oh my gosh, this is so cool.
You feel like you're in a shark tank, like one of those shark cages that you dive.
Yes. I was just like, I can't believe that just happened. Oh my gosh. And I was just like, okay, this is way cooler than I ever thought it was going to be. And so that year I literally got the biggest deer that I've ever gotten, which is right there on the wall. That's my 12 point field dressed at 195. Big, big deer. I mean, he was a brute. But I was sitting in my blind and I saw this deer coming through the valley. And I was like, oh my goodness, this is a huge deer. And very quickly sent Kevin a message because I knew he was coming back out from going in for breakfast. And I just told him to stop. And he thought I could see him somewhere and I couldn't. But anyways, so I literally was sitting out there and this deer came through and I shot it. And yeah, so I didn't know it was drop time, whatever, until we literally went over and picked up the head. And the everybody couldn't believe it because it is the only one that's ever been taken off the farm in 50 plus years. So that was pretty cool. But anyway,
everybody's like dream buck is to have a drop time buck. And then that one's just heavy all the way around. You could tell it was old. Did you ever get it aged?
This one was 4.5, I believe it was. About him was that he was a fighter. He has every one of his tines is busted. And he has scars on the back of his neck like you wouldn't believe. And when I had him, had the taxidermist take care of him, I said, don't fix any of that. I want him just the way he is. And so he was a fighter. He was a brute. He was out there and that's what he was doing. So, but that's what started my ground blind experience. And I have hunted in my tree stand since then, but there's nothing like sitting in my ground blind now. And so one year I just decided, you know what, I'm going to get me a little heater and sit out here and I'm going to just enjoy it. And from there it just evolved into, you know what, hey, I got this heater now. I could easily make something for myself to eat nice and hot out here, bring some soup out. And I think that's probably where that started was I first started out and I took soup out there and I heated it up on my heater. And then it evolved from there to bringing out venison bacon and bringing out eggs and biscuits and gravy. And a few years ago, I made tacos out there and I did a whole video on me making tacos and sent it to you guys.
Yeah, I remember I was sitting there and I think that morning I was eating the chocolate donuts, like just the little 5-pack roll of donuts. Mm-hmm. Most of them had been smushed from being carried out in my pack. And so I'm like getting crumbles out. My hands are freezing. And you're sending me videos from your heated blind of tacos. And I'm like, are you freaking kidding me right now?
Yeah. So that's pretty much how that all started with me starting to cook in my blind. And I absolutely love doing it now and coming up with different things. I think last year, I want to say I made spaghetti out there for lunch. This year, I took stuff out to make my breakfast. And I took everything out to make French toast out there and venison bacon. And I got my deer at 8 o'clock in the morning. So I didn't get a chance to actually make anything before I shot my deer, but I had the pan heating up. I actually made coffee, fresh coffee out there this year. And I just did it in my cast iron frying pan. I made fresh coffee on my stove. And that was my way to heat up this year, you know, something warm to drink out there. And so, but yeah, just, it's just a, I want to say it's just a, it's not a necessity, but it, it, you just figure out ways of doing different things, you know, that you can still do out there and enjoy it. And it's things that you like. So
yeah,
that's what I like about it.
Well, I feel like things taste better while you're hunting too.
Oh,
like when you're, absolutely. When you're out there and cold and you're just like, oh man, I'm hungry. It, everything tastes better. When I come off the mountain from elk hunting, or if I'm just duck hunting for the day and we stop somewhere to get food, gas station pizza had never tasted so good. Or like even a terrible restaurant, the food's going to taste good.
Mm-hmm.
There's just something about eating after being out in the woods, hunting, like replenishing. But yep. I can only imagine how good tacos taste
well,
while
and
you're actively hunting.
And the thing that I think another part of why I started doing that is because I love to go out in the morning. I go out before light. I sit out after dark. And so I'm out there all day long. All the other guys are going in. They make breakfast down at the farm and sit around, play cards, whatever. I don't like to do that. My hunting is me being in the woods all day long, sitting there. And so, yeah, I want something a little bit more than a summer sausage sandwich, or, you know, something more than, you know, just sitting out there and having donuts or hang on a second, my phone's beeping on me. And so I that's the other part of it, as I'm literally out there all day long. And so
yeah,
to bring something out there, one, yeah, it sounds funny to say it gives you something to do, but you know, when you're actually physically doing a little bit more than just sitting there, it keeps you warmer. Your mind's working a little bit more. I think that helps a lot too. And so I just really, really enjoy coming up with different things that I can try out there, and it hasn't hurt my hunting at all. So,
yeah. Well, if it can keep boredom from setting in too, it just makes you
right.
Like you might not be quite as attentive while you're cooking, but right after, you know, you're still in the mm-hmm. game where mm-hmm. I'm sure there's plenty of people who have left comments about like, how are you even seeing deer when you're cooking? Like you got to be right. paying attention. But those same people are probably scrolling their phone after being out there for an hour and yep. a half because they're bored yep. and they haven't seen anything. And so,
honestly, it's not much different. I look at it, it's not much different. You know, you might be looking to your left and you're not attentive to your right. And it's not really any different if I'm looking down at a frying pan, just looking real quick, than looking away to one way or the other. I'm just yeah. glancing a different way. And so
yep.
as long as you're keeping track of, you know, what's in the woods, you know, what was there, what wasn't there. You know, that's one thing that I love about being out there is I love to be able to just scan the woods. And I know that tree belongs there. That spot in the woods belongs there. Oh, wait a minute. That spot was not there before. And so I will stare at that spot until it moves or until I figure out that it's supposed to be there. And most of the time it ends up being a deer or an animal that was not there before when you looked at it and now it's there. And so, you know, it's just all about, you know, just knowing your surroundings. Where I sit, I have a good view down three different valleys. And so it really helps for me to be able to see down those valleys where I don't have to have my eyes fixed on them all the time. So.
Yeah. Yeah, and especially like on years when there's snow, it drives me crazy mm-hmm. coming up there and we don't, if there's no snow for mm-hmm. deer season, because like it seemed like every year when I was a kid, there was always snow during
deer season. It seemed like it all the time.
Yeah, and that was my favorite thing because you can catch movement in the snow. Mm-hmm. I mean, as far as your eye can see, like it could be way on the neighbor's property, but if a deer is walking through the snow, you're going to see it. Whereas right. in the leaves, like they might be right on top of you before you even know they're there. And so that's one thing that I feel like it's just easier to hunt, easier to pick out game when there's snow, because even if you're looking to the left, you might catch that movement crossing a white hill on your right side.
Right.
Even mm-hmm. in cover. Like it's right. just so much better. But yeah, this year we didn't get any snow.
Yeah, and we actually had snow right after you left, so we had a little bit of snow later on. And so, yeah, what a difference in the woods that makes. I mean, totally different. All of a sudden, it's like, oh, look at there. There's a deer. I would have never seen that, you know, 2 days before that. So,
oh, yeah. Yeah, you actually see them, and then you can see what direction they're traveling mm-hmm. on the walk in. Like, you're coming across fresh tracks. You go, okay. Because everybody knows trail cameras don't pick up everything. Right. Like, you could have a trail camera, and if that deer just walks 5 feet to the right, you'll never mm-hmm. see it.
Right.
And so when you go out there, especially if there's fresh snow overnight, and you're like, check this out. Like, they walked right past where I'm sitting. They walked right under my stand or right past my blind. Like, that's real-time information of where the deer are headed. But, yeah, I think you're going to have to come out with a cookbook. We talked about it a little bit yesterday. But that is, like, the number one request on social media right now from that video. Everyone's like, she needs to have a cookbook. And I can't remember how many. I think it has, like, 1,800 likes, that one comment. Make a cookbook. We'll all buy it. And like 1,800 people have basically liked it and said, yeah, you know what? We will.
You know, I've thought about it over and over, and I thought, what can I do with that? But I am seriously looking into doing that. I am going to see what I can come up with and see if I can get something out there before. I'm not going to commit to a time, but I'd like to see it get out there before next fall, before the hunting season. But yeah, I think it'd be fun to do that. Put some stories and stuff in there, whatever. I don't know. I guess I'd have to play with it and see. But yeah, I wouldn't mind doing that. And honestly, it would be a, you know, I'm already thinking about what I'm going to do next year for hunting.
Here's the thing, though. If you're doing a cookbook, people are going to want appetizers and like main course and desserts, and they're going to want... They're going to want everything. It's going to be just a whole new trend is cooking full meals while you're hunting.
Yeah.
But
I might have to incorporate just some wild game recipes in there, you know, that maybe you won't want to tackle in a tree stand or, I mean, a tree blind or what, or I mean, a ground blind, I'm sorry. But, you know, give some other things out there. So
I'm just imagining this all happening in a tree stand. Like, you've got your grill ratchet strapped to the tree somehow. You're 30 feet up cooking. Crap. I just dropped the salt. Like, what am I going to do?
There you go. That would be I'd have to have quite a size platform to fit my little stand on and have all my stuff set up in there. But
the thing is, I know she's made in the last 3-4 years enough stuff to fill at least a good 25-30 page cookbook. So.
Yeah.
Do you ever reap the benefits from this?
Oh, absolutely.
Rarely. I don't let him in my stand.
Well, after she shot a deer, then I'm allowed to come over. Then it's all right. But I remember distinctly her and I sitting there one time eating venison bacon. We were still trying to fill a doe tag, and we had a deer in the back of the Kubota. Yes. And so the deer is behind us, and we're both eating venison bacon. And we took a selfie. So
we have a picture of us
two eating venison bacon with the deer in the bed behind us. So, I mean,
oh my gosh. Yeah,
once in a while, I actually had part of her sausage just last year.
Yeah.
She made.
Yeah. I told him to come over after I got my deer.
She makes, you know, the hot caramel.
I love making caramel apples in there. You just put the caramel over the stove and let that melt, and then you dip your apples in it. And oh my goodness, that is such a treat in the woods.
Oh my gosh.
I know, right?
Here's the thing. Nobody would even listen. Nobody would comment on the video. Nobody would have any respect for you just cooking out in the blind if it weren't for the fact that you're just killing deer while you're doing
all
it.
All the time.
You know what I mean? Well, like, there's probably plenty of people who go out there and eat gourmet meals and they come home empty-handed. Mm-hmm. But the fact that you're just out there cooking up a storm and the deer are just sticking their head in your blind window, like, what the heck?
Well, and it's funny because I was reading some of the comments after we did that little segment, and people are like, yeah, you know, I douse myself in the, you know, dopey and this and that, and I can't get a deer to even come near me, and here she's cooking out there and doing this and that. And I'm like, you know what? I've never had a problem with them caring one bit that I'm out there, you know, doing that. And I did see a bunch of other people comment the same thing that, you know, hey, that's what I do in my blind. And I'm thinking, you know, it it's never affected my hunting whatsoever. I mean, I never missed a deer because I was doing that. I mean, they come close to me all the time. Opening day, I can't even remember how many deer I saw opening day, but the Sunday after, I saw 19 deer that day on that Sunday. And so they did not care that I'm out there, you know? I mean, they just don't care. So I don't know. Like people, I don't know what to tell you, but it works.
I feel like people underplay deer's curiosity. Like they are very curious animals.
I agree.
Which doesn't make sense for them being a prey species. You know, like you would think they'd be scared of everything, but they're always interested to figure out what something is. And then once they know, they're gone.
Right.
But like until then, like they'll sit there. And I mean, even this year, we moved around quite a bit. Me and Wayne did as these deer were coming in. I mean, Wayne's rifle slipped off of his lap while these two does were coming in. They were inside of 50 yards at one point, staring straight at us. And like, I'd be about to tell Wayne something and he'd like be moving. And I'm like, no, don't move. They're looking right at us. And they just stood there trying to figure out what the heck we are. You know what I mean? Yeah. Like, and I'm sure part of it had to do with they heard me grunt and rattle just before. So they're probably going like, what the heck is that? Like we heard a deer. Yeah. It doesn't look like a deer, but something's up there. But yeah, I just think a deer's curiosity will get them in trouble, but also we just don't put as much value in that as we should as hunters.
Right. I totally agree because I've tried grunting and snorting and wheezing and, rattling and doing the can call and all of those things. And I definitely seem to get more reaction from just cooking than I ever do from any of those. I will see deer cooking before I see them with any of that stuff usually. So
I just imagine all these deer on the property having a conversation with each other. Like, you got to see this lady. I mean, she's cooking a full meal. She thinks we don't know. We know. She's out there.
She's cooking up Uncle Fred. You remember that meat basket from last year? Yeah.
Exactly.
But I get a hard time at camp because, you know, she gets up in the morning early. She's out there before sun's up. She's got all her stuff out in her blind or in her backpack when she goes out there. Sometimes I get up early enough to drop her off or she takes the Kubota out there. And she gets out in her blind. And we have the rest of the group that hunts. We go to the farmhouse at, you know, a set time, 9:30, 10 o'clock, sometimes 10:30, maybe 11. But we all pick a day to make breakfast. And so we'll make a breakfast. And it's the same thing every year. My dad, well, should we save something for Rhonda? No, she's got her own shit.
Yeah.
And then there'll be somebody.
She's not saving it for us.
Should we save a plate for Rhonda? No, we don't need to save anything for Rhonda. She's got her own food. Every day, every year, it's the same thing all the time. And I said, the only thing I got to do is watch my phone because if she shoots something, then I'm going to go help her out. But as far as food-wise, nope, we didn't got to worry about her because she's got more stuff out there than we probably have in here.
Yeah. She's eating better than we are. Yep, and she isn't a deer blind. I feel like we need to give everybody an idea of the layout of your blind. I mean, I'm guessing it's what, like a 5x5, 6x6 blind?
Let's see. So I would say it's a 6x6. It's octagonal. Just has the one door.
Okay.
It has the zip down, pull down and up windows in there. And so I have those open all the time. And then I just have where the door part is behind me that is just kind of like blacked off. I mean, you know, there's no windows or anything.
The full wall. Yep.
Yeah. So
you've got the door to your back.
Yep.
Windows around probably what, 270 degrees or so?
Yeah. Probably about that. And it's probably about a gap of 18 inches to 20, 22 inches, I guess, that the windows are open that I can see through. I sit on a hunting chair and it's a swivel one. Just picked this one up that I had this year. I picked that up last year and I got so frustrated with it this year because I would turn and it would squeak on me. And I'm like, okay, this not going to work for me. And I had my old one out there because I grabbed the wrong one at first. And so I went back to my old one and I'm like, okay, yeah, I'm sticking with this one.
Yeah.
But anyway, so I just sit on there. And then in front of me, I have this cage that I have my buddy heater sitting in. And at the top, there's a grate. And I take my cast iron pan out there because I am a cast iron junkie. I love my cast iron. And
I think that even though you said you're a cast iron junkie, I feel like that's underselling it by a lot.
You have
that might be.
I mean, just okay. Everyone knows cast iron weighs quite a bit.
Mm-hmm.
How many pounds of cast iron cookware do you think you own?
Well, right now I'm just looking in my kitchen area and I have two towers that are probably triple, quadruple. Some of them have five pans on a shelf and there's 1, 2, 3, 4, 5, 6, 7 shelves on each tower. So whatever that comes out to be. So that's quite a bit there. And then I also have baking pans and I have a china cabinet that has a bunch of cast iron in it. And then I have some more out in my garden shed that I'm going to be cleaning up and getting ready to use.
More in the shop.
And more in the shop. Yeah. So yeah, I have a lot of cast iron.
Do you think you have a full ton?
I'm guessing, no, not a full ton. I'm guessing she's got a half a ton.
I honestly
1,000 pounds.
1,000 pounds of cast iron cookware.
I'm pretty sure we're on board there. Yeah.
Oh, you're top 0.1% of people when it comes to cast iron ownership. If cast iron was currency, you'd be Warren Buffett.
I don't know about that.
Yeah.
But anyway, so yeah, I love my cast iron. I do, and it is the perfect marriage to cooking venison in. Let me put it that way. So to cook my venison bacon in it, to cook eggs in it, to cook burgers, steaks, chicken, I don't care what it is in there, desserts. I love my cast iron.
She bakes cornbread, cake, I mean everything in it.
I make my pineapple upside down cakes in
it.
She's
got a waffle maker.
I have two waffle makers and they make the best waffles you could ever have. So anyways. So yes, I do love my cast iron. And so when I'm out in the hunting blind, I have to have my cast iron with me as well. So I have that out there and use that. And the thing about cast iron, so a little bit off the subject, but the thing about cast iron, it is one of the most forgiving ways to cook and it is so easy to clean and people are intimidated by that and they shouldn't be because it is super easy to clean and maintain and use. It really is.
Well, for a long time people thought
camping for everything. So
for a long time though, people thought that you can't use dish soap on cast iron. You can't use this product or that product. And there's channels just dedicated to cast iron on social media and on YouTube right now. And these guys are going, quit. They're like, quit making a big deal about it. Right. You can beat the crap out of cast iron and bring it back to life.
Right.
Dish soap does not do what people think it does. It breaks down a lot of the oils, which that's why I feel like everyone is opposed to using dish soap because they want those oils on it. They want that, you know, seasoning on the on the pans or on the grill or whatever it is.
Mm-hmm.
But yeah, I just think that people do get intimidated by it and they go like, you know, I'm not used to this. Everyone's used to nonstick.
And if it does stick, people get frustrated with it. And it has nothing to do with it. It has all to do with the seasoning and how you start when you start cooking. So if you start with a hot pan, do you have the oil in it that you need? Because if you don't, it's going to stick. Or do you not have, you know, it's all of those factors. And so, honestly, I was just thinking about this the other day. I'm like, there's probably about 8 pieces that I use on a regular basis. And then there's others that I use here and there and for whatever reason. But yeah, it is a very forgiving piece of cookware that I use soap. I used to be one of those anti-soaper people, and I would never use soap in it. But then I started doing some research on it, and it's soap isn't what it used to be. Soap used to be lye, and lye was not a good thing to have on your cast iron. It's not that way anymore, unless that's what you choose to use for soap, but that's not what I do. But so if I get a little soap on it or whatever, it's not a big deal. The biggest thing with cast iron is if you are going to get it wet, you need to get it dried and oiled immediately. That's it.
And there's some people out there that are going to say absolutely no soap at all. And that's people's personal preference.
Totally up
that's
to fine. Them.
Yeah. But we have, and we haven't had an issue.
I haven't reseasoned a pan probably in 30 plus years. And I use soap on it. So. Mm-hmm.
Yeah. Yeah, I mean, moisture obviously is a big deal for it. And so, like, getting it wet, I could see that being an issue. I have a big Blackstone grill. I bought, I went out and got one for myself for Father's Day last year, once we finally had our own house. And I made the mistake of leaving the lid open. Like, I left it open to let it cool, you know, afterward. And then I totally forgot to go back out because we were hosting. I think Sam's family came over and some other people, and then it rained, and I went out there. Oh my gosh, I had to reseason that one for sure. Yeah. I mean, it was not good, but even so, I mean, that's like a 15-20 minute process, and you can reseason the entire, you know, I don't even know, 36 by 24 inch cooktop. And so I do think people are just too intimidated by it. It's unfamiliar. Right. And so then people don't get into it. But okay, so you've got your buddy heater. You're great. That's if you're the center of a clock, that's sitting at 12 o'clock in front of you. Okay.
Yes.
So let's work to 1 o'clock and go around the clock and talk about the layout at of your blind.
At 1 o'clock, I probably don't have anything sitting right there. At about 3 o'clock, I have this little camp. A foldable camp small table that I just have sitting there that I put my stuff on. Like, I put my phone on there. I have my lighter on there for my buddy heater in case the clicker doesn't work or I don't want to use that. Igniter. Igniter.
No, anyways. I know what you meant.
Yeah.
Hold on. Before you get too far, is it a single burner buddy or is it the double?
It's the double.
It's the double. The big buddy.
Yep. It's the big buddy. And I have that hooked up to a propane tank, a 20 pound propane tank. I have the adapter on it and it's hooked up right there.
So yeah, you know how much you cook, you've got to.
Well, we found out one of the first years she had the big buddy that after she went through like three small cylinders, it's like, yeah, we're getting you hooked up with a 20 pound because it was just.
Yeah.
And the hard part with the small cylinders for that is, you know, it's set up for that, but you can get the adapter. The hard part with that was those cylinders would freeze up on you and then they just shut off.
Yeah.
And so that's the hard part. You might not be out of fuel, but in the cold, if it's, you know, 0 to 20 or whatever out in the woods, they just freeze up on you and then they just shut off. And so then all of a sudden you don't have any heat source. So that was the whole thing.
And that messes up her cooking.
Well, yeah.
Yeah. And then you're just hunting instead of cooking gourmet meals. Yeah.
Speaking of cooking, I got to go get the ribs. So.
But yeah, so then at 3 o'clock, I just have that little stand there and it has my grunt and my, my can call and all that kind of stuff that I can easily access. And then, just to that, it'd be between 3 and 4 o'clock or so, I might have my gun resting right there. And then behind me, I just have, I literally take out there with me. I take a tote out there and it's out there when I set up my blind. So when I take that out there, I have in that tote, I have anything that I might need. I have some toilet paper in there. I have some spatula in there for my cast iron in there. I have all that stuff pre out there already so that it's not something I'm carrying out there. And then anything that I would need for any of that kind of stuff. I always have extra water, extra bottle of water out there. Like I said, then you can swing around and I either have the tote right behind me or right next to me or whatever. And I have the one thing that I absolutely love about my heater too, is I have this blanket, and I think it's Sherpa or something, but I can literally drape that around that cage to encase some of the heat from that and make it a little bit more effective out there. So I kind of like that. I have gotten a little too close every once in a while, so it will, you know, start to melt, but I have one spot on there that happened to, and I've learned. But yeah, so
you need to just get an emergency blanket or a piece of tin or something like that. What I use if I'm camping, if I'm like backcountry camping in the winter or in really cold weather, I just buy, you know, those reflective visors that you put in your windshield.
Yep.
I buy like an $8 reflective visor at Walmart. Yep. And then especially in the morning, I've got, when I'm like hiking the backcountry or like on a remote hunt, I always have my little jet boil stove.
Yep.
And then, you know, I can boil water in that and make a mountain house meal or a peak refuel or whatever meals I have. And I'll set that little reflective visor up around it. And it's insane how well that works for like just bouncing heat off to you. Right. I've warmed myself up in like 45 seconds from being very cold to just having that up around a small fire or a jet boil.
Yeah. Yeah. And this year while I was sitting out there, I have a jet boil for when we go kayaking and camping. And so I'm going to take my jet boil out there next year too. And then that just gives me an extra source for boiling some water for my coffee. It'll be a little bit easier than in the frying pan that I did this year. So.
Oh yeah. So much more efficient than trying to boil over. Yeah. A buddy heater.
But the one thing with my buddy heater, I mean, my legs will just get on fire warm from that buddy heater. And so I'm real careful about entrapping that heat too much because I mean, they'll just start, I'll start heating up out there pretty good. So it gets pretty warm out in there. Even though the windows are all open and, you know, everything's open around, it still encases that heat pretty good. But so then you just swing around and then there's the propane tank. And so it's nothing major. It's something that anybody can do. And I know I laugh at this. I was laughing at this actually last night thinking about this. And I know for a number of years, you keep saying, Mom, you've gone soft. Mom, you've gone soft. You used to sit out on the middle of a field and be covered in snow and hunt.
The polar opposite of what you used to do is what you have become. You used to sit on a windy knob. It didn't matter if it was 20 below zero. If it was deer season, if it was rifle season, you were sitting on that knob in freezing rain, in snow, in wind. And when we would show up to be like, hey, do you want to run to the town over and get Hardee's with us? You would be so mad. Like, what are you doing? How dare you? How dare you infringe on my hunting season? And it was just like, we'd see a quick couple hand waves and we're like, oh, we better get out of here. We're in trouble. Like all of us are in trouble. Did she see me in the vehicle? Because I hope she didn't. Hopefully this only comes back on you. And now you've got a full-on gourmet kitchen out there with your heater. And correct me if I'm wrong, in one of the pictures that you sent, did I see a little toilet?
I have a bucket out there that has a toilet.
You have a toilet. You have a toilet. I knew it.
I was like, I've never used it out there. I've never used it. I have it, but I've never used it. So.
All right, guys. If you're anything like me, you have been doing some redneck engineering in order to hang your shed antlers or your cutoffs up on the wall, or maybe they didn't even make it to the wall. They're laying all over the floor, leaned up in a corner somewhere, and not being displayed the way that they should be. I've finally found an awesome solution with Rack Hub. In fact, I just got the RH2 XL and put my largest match set on it, hung it up in my man cave, and I'm telling you right now, it looks amazing. In the past, my wife's been like, we're not hanging deadheads, we are not hanging antlers, it just doesn't look good, it doesn't fit the vibe. And now that she's seen the mount from Rack Hub, she's okay with me putting them in the house. Unfortunately for her, it's a little bit too late because I officially have a man cave and a podcast studio for myself, and all of my sheds are going to be up on the wall soon. Once I tested it out and realized that it was rock solid, I went back online and ordered a 4-pack of the RH2 XLs so that I can get all of my match sets up on the wall, and I can't wait to finally display them proudly for everyone to see. If you've dealt with that same thing in the past, or maybe you're currently dealing with it, go to rackhub.com, figure out what mounting system works best for you, and make sure to use code NOMADIC for 10% off your order.
And the only reason I have it out there is because we had it on our pontoon for if the grandkids were with us and they had to go to the bathroom, we didn't want to have to run back to shore. And now we've since sold our pontoon. I'm like, well, I might as well use this if I need it. So I sat it out there, have not used the thing, but it's there if I would happen to have to
just use in case.
Just in case.
Listen, when you're making tacos in a blind and you have an all day set, that could get pretty risky.
It's not Taco Bell, though.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah, that's why I give you such a hard time, because I used to tell people all the time, I'm like, my mom's the most diehard hunter that I know. She sits out in elements that, like, they say the Orange Army, most of the Orange Army goes home when it's these temperatures and these weather conditions. Not my mom. She is just like a glowing highlighter up on top of a snow-covered hill, no matter what time of day. If the sun is up, she is out there. Mm-hmm. And then, yeah, all of a sudden you're hunting out of a blind with a heater, making food.
And like I said, that all happened because of my knee surgery. And so that's a game changer. I will tell you, it's a game changer. And if I want to keep hunting like I want to until I'm 95 years old, I keep saying, when I'm 95, you're going to be putting me in my blind. I don't care. But if I want to keep doing it, you have to adapt and overcome. That's what you have to do. And so I've learned to adapt what I need to do to make it work for me. And believe me, having a knee replacement and sitting out in those elements, that's a game changer. Your knee freezes up pretty quick on you. So I got to do I got to do, and it works. So, anybody can do it. Anybody. So
listen, about this stuff. I knew nothing about like big blinds or anything. I mean, growing up, you bring a 5-gallon bucket out there, you flip it over and you sit on it.
Yep.
Or you find a down tree, and if you're hunting with somebody, now you both have a seat.
Yep.
Or the first tree stand I ever sat in, I used your plug-in skill circular saw, and I cut up a couple 2x4s and a couple pieces of plywood. And I made a little L-shaped bench. And remember, you bought like a $15 wooden ladder from a yard sale. And I carried that out there with me. And I sat like 8 feet off the ground. That was the first. It was just a homemade ratchet strap, couple 2x4s and plywood. That was the first tree stand I ever sat in. To this day, there's not a single blind out on the property that we hunt up in Wisconsin. But then going out to the Myron farm, I was like, oh, crap, dude. These guys have the MGM Grand in here. I mean, like, some of these places have wraparound porches on them. So it's like, even in comparison to the people you're hunting with, you're pretty primitive.
Yeah, I am. And it's funny, though, because now this year, there's two more people that we hunt with that are out there that have the hunting blind with the heaters in them and the chairs. they're kind of adapting a little bit to what I've done because they know it works. Because after I'm done usually with my blind, if I get my deer, everybody's like, oh, can I sit over there? Are you going to sit over there anymore? Can I sit in your blind? I'm like, I'm done with it. I don't care.
Yeah. How did you luck out and get that spot? Cause it seems like you've got the hot spot, or has the pressure just shifted?
I don't know. I really don't. So my father-in-law used to sit up on the hill, and he doesn't hunt so much anymore. And I say this every year, I say hunting is different for everybody. Some people are there to go out like I do and hunt from dark to dark. Some people are there just for the camaraderie and just to get together at hunting camp and go in and play cards and shoot the breeze and just have fun. Some people want to go out for an hour or two and that's it. You know what? None of those are wrong. Some people want to use scents and cover up every scent that they can possibly do, you know, to help their hunting. Some want to be in a, a ground blind and a tree stand and a whatever. And it's different for every single person, but it's not wrong for any of them. And so whatever is going to work for you, make it work for you, because that's where you're going to have fun. And that's where things are going to, you know, you're going to want to keep doing it. And that's the thing with hunting for me. But so my father-in-law is, you know, he's 83, going to be 83 in January. And, you know, 83, you know, he's seen a lot of deer seasons. He's seen a lot of deer hunting. And now it's about being there with family and everything else for him. So he doesn't sit up on that hill anymore. And so there was really nobody in that area. And I sat up on an opposite hill in my tree stand. But when he pretty much gave up hunting up there, we asked, I said, you know, this is a spot that I wouldn't mind sitting. Is it possible? And so then that's how that all began. And so I started setting up down there when I started in my ground blind. And he's been very, very awesome about letting me sit there and stuff. And honestly, for the little bit of time that I sit there, that it takes me to get my deer, pretty much everybody has the whole rest of the season that anybody could sit there. So
I've been there a few times.
Nobody's actually going out on opening day to hunt. They're just pretending to hunt because they're all waiting for your spot.
They're waiting
to open
for my
up.
Stand.
Yeah, we got a separate text message going around without her in it. Yeah. That's just getting in it. Did she shoot yet? What is she waiting for? You know.
Please tell me that was Rhonda.
Yeah,
I'm on my way.
Can I have that spot? Yeah. Are you done?
Oh my gosh! Well, but you ruined Sam because Sam came out with you a couple of years ago, and it was like 8 seconds into opening day or whatever. I mean, it was so fast.
I think it was 7:05.
Yeah, 7:05 on opening day, and she goes, "Babe, your mom just shot a deer. We're already heading back to the house. Why don't you hunt like this?" Or something like that. And I'm
and
like,
then there was another one there. And so they walked up behind or back to your stand, and then it came back towards me. So then I shot it. So there was literally two bucks, hers right away, and then another one within an hour.
But they were
by her stand. It's just like whatever.
Well, and it was fun. I was going to mention when Sam came out with me, it was a lot of fun because she asked if she could sit with me, and you were like, "Oh, I don't know if you want to do that. My mom does not move. You're not allowed to go anywhere." Blah blah blah.
Yeah, no, you guys are freaking playing Scrabble in there now, watching the Packer game on a big screen.
Oh, whatever.
Yeah. Eating.
That's not what I would be doing. Yeah. But anyway.
Do you want some creme brulee, Sam? I made this fresh for you.
But it was fun having her out there because she, you know, we were sitting out there and we were, you know, whispering back and forth. I mean, when you're in a ground blind, it really does muffle that kind of noise. So you don't really, that doesn't project in the woods like, you know, if you weren't in there. But so we were just sitting there and literally it was that quick. I mean, that buck came through and I was like, oh. So I turn and I go to shoot and I turn around behind her and there's another buck standing back there. And I'm like,
oh my gosh.
Yeah. Down in the valley, and we're like, and she's like, "Is that it? Like, are we done?"
Wow, that's done. Why does Dan spend 60 days straight out in the woods when he could just do this?
He's like, he goes hunting for 10 days or so, he tells me, and you're
back
done
with
in 10 minutes.
And he comes back with a gross.
Yeah. Thanks for that, Kevin. Soon, dude. Okay, Kevin, I got to ask you. My mom's got her set up and all this food. I know it's Christmas Eve and we've been talking for an hour. So we're going to end with this cuz you've got ribs. I think I've got probably now cold Culver's inside waiting for me. But what is your hunting setup look like and what is your like average meal out in the woods? Now,
I typically
this is not counting when you go and help my mom. Okay. This is like without Rhonda Myron's cooking, what are you eating out there and what does your hunting setup look like?
Typically, I don't eat anything out in the woods unless it's like a Nutter Butter or some kind of snack like that, maybe a Slim Jim or something, you know. But my setup, well, up until this year, I had a cabin on stilts. It was
with a deck and stairway. Just saying.
It was a little bit too big though, because I had to do too much moving around to actually see up. I didn't have big enough windows, so I had to move around inside to see.
You worked up a sweat walking from one side of your mansion to the other.
It's hard to get around in there. But I unfortunately had to take that down. That was built in 2007. So it served me well, and I've shot a lot of deer out of there.
None on the wall, but the thing.
They were probably turned into venison or burger or something. Anyway, he was asking me questions, though. Okay. But my setup now, similar to what your mom has, but I'm on the ground. I move myself more towards the point of the valley, the main valley, closer to a finger that sort of heads south behind me, so I can see more of the main valley, because I do know there was some deer getting between the finger. I'm going to overlook a little more now, and then the next finger up for where my nephew is, they were getting between us there. It'll also let me get a little closer to the hillside that's on the back side of where your mom's stand is.
He's moving closer.
Yeah, I'm trying.
Everyone's just slowly creeping in. It's like a really slow invasion.
I actually got a vision of another stand, and it's going to be just over the hill from your mom. So you might not
soon people are going to be texting you in the group message that you are a part of, going, is that biscuits and gravy? I can smell it.
I can see it.
You're going to have like a little, it's going to be like a super long clothesline that they can just reel up. It's going to be like a boat trailer crank, and they're just going to, you're just going to hook it to five different lines and send food up to them.
Hey, can't we do one of those tubes like the bank has and just do it underground to certain people's wife?
Yeah, just you push the button and it's just shoof, and here comes your breakfast.
There you go.
They were eggs. Now they're scrambled eggs.
Yeah, but hey.
So just let me say about Kevin's blind, okay? His is starting to look a lot like mine. And so he wants a platform. He bought a ground blind. He bought a heater like mine. He bought the same chair. So it's starting to transform a little bit more like the mine. So just wait.
But no, I think I'm gonna move out more towards that point. I'm actually thinking about, and she hasn't really, we haven't talked about this much, but I'm thinking about taking our snowmobile trailer and making sort of a permanent type blind on that, and maybe moving that around for my dad, because he is getting older, and then if he wants to go sit somewhere or whatever, he can just hook that on to his UTV and pull it around and drop it and sit, because then it'd be comfy for him to move around. I'm going to build a little wood platform and then put my blind on it as I need to, and set up, and I'm going to make my own little cage, and I'm going to actually have shelves and stuff built into it, and I'm going to build a cribbage board and stuff into mine, and you know,
you're going to have a tanning bed.
Oh yeah.
You're going to have a pool table.
I'm going to run electric to mine and have all. I'm going to have the game on and everything.
You're going to have Starlink on top, and you're just going to be
I literally do know a few people that have TVs and recliners in their blinds in Wisconsin. That will never be me.
I know,
but I just think it's hilarious when they tell me they kick back in their recliner and they have the game on while they're sitting there in their blind.
There's no way.
Listen, I have a hard time staying awake as it is when I'm sitting out in the woods all day. If I put a recliner out there, I would get nothing done. I might as well stay home and sleep.
Right.
Rhonda's definitely the talk of camp and camps around us, because between her food and shooting the nice deer and everything, but it's like I say, I mean, she puts in the work, you know, and it's never a dull moment around camping time or hunting time, because you see test tubes and all this different stuff in the fridge. It's like I get to the point I don't even bother asking.
I haven't seen one of those since biology class in ninth grade.
A beaker with a straw?
I don't even know. I honestly
hold on. Is that a margarita machine?
Yeah. I honestly think that those little tubes were from some gumballs. So you go to Sam's Club, you go to Sam's Club, and they had this whole pack, you know, because Sam's Club, they catered to people that have stores and stuff, like convenience stores, and they all had little gumballs in them. And so I bought them and dumped all the gumballs in the garbage. The little tubes. That's what I bought them for. Because I got them like for like $2 on clearance. Yeah, so I'm like, hey. Well.
Oh yeah, there's totes of stuff around here, Dan. You wouldn't even believe. I mean, there's just random packaging of whatever, and it's like, what are those for? I don't know. I might put something in there for my hunting blind. Well, okay. Can't wait to see what that is.
For real. So
we're
going to have to share all of this with the masses. Like, people are intrigued by this, and we're going to have to share not only recipes, but we're going to have to share what the setup looks like, the grates, the storage containers, like how you're keeping your stuff on your way out, what you're putting in your blind before season versus what you're packing out with you each day, and your utensils, your cast. I mean, it's going to be a big thing, and I'm excited. Sam and I have already been talking about it. I think I sent you stuff yesterday. Sam was on Canva. She's like, oh my gosh, okay, this is what the inside of the book could look like. This is what the cover could look like. I know she wants to do this, and I think, and I'm like, this is going to be a hit. People love it. And we might just have to do a whole series for it, but we'll come up with a good social media name, and we're going to just have to keep the listeners informed on when things are releasing, when they can get their hands on it. But I think this could be a lot of fun and turn into something big.
Yeah.
It does sound like a lot of fun. So I will start working on stuff. I know it was funny because Sam sent me a message yesterday, and she says, it's Christmas break, and so you should concentrate on getting this stuff done. And I sent her back a message, and I said, Sam, what is Christmas break? And she's like, oh, yeah, didn't think about that.
Yeah,
I don't have kids that are on Christmas break anymore.
I think she said that before she realized that we were responsible for our kids 24/7 for the next 2 weeks. So, I think it's going to go quick. And Sam, I mean, you guys know Sam. She's 100 miles an hour all the time. Like, she only has Top Gear, and that's it. And that's one of the things I love about her. But she's so fired up about it. She's like, I'm so excited to help your mom with this. Oh, my gosh, I can't wait to start talking about it. I can't wait to see some of these recipes. And so I think it's going to be really fun to be involved in. But also, I just feel like I need to come sit in your blind with you one day. And try some of this stuff out before we fully commit. Like, I got to make sure that if I'm going to be pitching it, one, I need to tell people like, hey, this is actually good. It's worth buying.
Yeah.
Wow.
Mom,
your hands are dirty. Your hands are dirty. I don't want you to get that on your rifle. Let me just shoot this deer while I'm sitting here.
Yes, that would be
That's pretty pathetic.
Oh, wow.
I actually got to make
that. The guy who says I've gone soft.
Listen, if I can get fed while I shoot a big buck, that sounds pretty good to me. The older I get, the more sitting up in a tree I'm like, why do I do this again?
Funny how that all evolves. You know, the years go by, and all of a sudden you're like, you know, sitting in a ground blind's not so bad. Oh, you know, having a heater in here. Hey, if I can do it, why wouldn't I? You know,
well, I told Sam
that'd be the perfect gift for you, is to have you take your mom on a hunt with you so she could cook for you.
Yeah, absolutely. So she can cook. That'd be perfect. No,
I would love to cook at a hunting camp. So if anybody else needs to cook for a hunting camp, you let me know.
Yeah.
Oh, I might have a gig for you in 2025 right away.
Oh,
yeah, I think you'd be down for that.
I would love that.
We need a huge trailer haul of cast iron.
Kevin will come and just
that guy on Yellowstone.
Oh yeah. No, I think one, that would be a lot of fun to have you come and cook at a hunt camp. But either way, I mean, I'm excited for what this next year has in store. We'll definitely get a cookbook launched before next hunting season. I don't think that'll be an issue at all.
No.
But yeah, people love you. So far, 2 years in a row, we've made two videos while we were at your house, and each one, I think, topped my charts of most viewed videos for the year. So I'm just saying, you might have a career in cooking or just in social media, period.
So maybe we just start your own.
Start your own. I just watch my views all tank.
Yeah, okay.
You can never do that.
Well, I love you guys. It's Christmas Eve. I'll let you get back to your night. I know you've got food to eat. We've got cookies to go and make, and I have to finish. Well, once the kids go to bed, I have to finish being Santa for the evening and get some stuff moved around. So love you guys. And we'll FaceTime tomorrow on Christmas and keep everybody informed on what's going on.
Sounds good.
I'm making a cage probably tonight or tomorrow.
So he'll maybe try and highlight that tomorrow and show it to you. So
that's going
to
be perfect. Yeah. We'll share it. We'll share it down the road. We'll get it honed in and get people excited. So love you guys. And
love you too. Tell everybody hi and love them.
Saw this app.
I got a hit.
In the new limited series, DTF St. Louis, Jason Bateman, David Harbour, and Linda Cardellini star as three suburbanites who spice up their love lives.
Wow.
Don't miss the new HBO original limited series, DTF St. Louis, premiering March 1st on HBO Max.
This episode is brought to you by Peloton. Break through the busiest time of year with the brand new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus. Powered by Peloton IQ. With real-time guidance and endless ways to move, you can personalize your workouts and train with confidence. Helping you reach your goals in less time. Let yourself run, lift, sculpt, push, and go. Explore the new Peloton Cross Training Tread Plus at onepeloton.com.
You're listening to the Sportsman's Empire Podcast Network, and this episode is brought to you by Interstate Batteries. For all of your battery needs, visit your local Interstate Batteries retail store. Interstate Batteries, outrageously dependable.